Hi, podcasters. This is Brooke. I'm your art barista at Let's Talk Art. Today, I'm talking to New York City painter Brian Rutenberg. Brian was one of my first interviews, and he remains one of my favorite artists. He grew up in South Carolina, moved to New York City, and I've been able to see several of his exhibitions at the Gerald Melberg Gallery here in Charlotte. I recently went to an artist talk at the opening of one of his most recent exhibitions called The Wild South. It truly was amazing. He just turned 60, so he was going through his vibrant career. It was so great to hear his thoughts and feelings about the art and his knowledge of art history. I knew I had to get him on the pod again. Enjoy! I've never been smart with investments or stocks, but one thing I've learned over the years is that an investment in knowledge pays the best interest. If you want to get smart with your money, you can trade smarter and maximize your returns with Trade with UFOs. Trade with UFOs is the brand that represents the community of users trading with predictive tools. You don't have to be good with stocks. They literally hold your hand while you trade, teaching you everything you need to know. You see, Trade with UFOs is also a portal which provides access to predictive apps, predictive courses, and predictive coaching, all to show you how to make money using unfilled orders. Why am I so passionate about this? Because then we'll all have more money in our pockets to buy more art. It's time to get smart with your money. Leverage your success with Trade with UFOs. Go to tradewithufos.com and use my offer code Brooke for 50% off discount on all of their products.
Brooke?
Hey, Brian.
Hey, how are you?
Great. How about you?
I'm good. Let me get the video.
Sure.
There we go.
Awesome. Hey.
Is that Ida Applebaum behind you?
No, that is that's Marisol.
Marisol, of course.
Marisol Escobar.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was watching your videos and just so impressed with how much art history you know and how much it influences your work.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm an eternal student of art history.
Awesome. Same. Yeah. I found out about Marisol, I guess, not too long ago, I guess within the last few years, and just been fascinated with her and just wondered why no one really knows about her.
Yeah.
So.
I know I haven't seen her work in many years. So it's great to see them.
So yeah. Love them. So how are you today?
I'm good. It's kind of drizzly and a little bit chilly here in New York. And we're going out to dinner with friends tonight and then off to Westchester for Thanksgiving tomorrow.
Cool. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for meeting me on like the day before Thanksgiving. So, I'm
working every day, so.
Awesome.
So we did this like several years ago, 10 years ago?
Probably 10 years ago or so. Yeah, you were, like when I first started doing this. You were one of my first artists. And
I remember, yeah.
So yeah, it was, I've been doing it since then and just been loving it. And just been showing up consistently, like you say. And yeah. But always admiring your work and just loving your stuff, and was so pleased to find out that you were doing an artist talk at Gerald Melberg, and been trying to catch your exhibitions when I can. And so,
thank you.
And just watching your videos today. Oh my gosh. You are a philosopher too.
Well, that's kind to say. I look a lot and I read a lot. And I also just follow the example of my teachers. Mm-hmm. There are four whom I can cite for you. William Halsey, the College of Charleston.
Yeah.
Michael Tyzak, also College of Charleston. Mm-hmm. John Ramondi, who is a sculptor based in Florida. And a painter named Gregory Aminoff, whom I studied with at the School of Visual Arts when I came here to go to grad school, almost 40 years ago. So those four, with Brenda Goodman, there's a few others that were, Judy Pfaff, there were a few other artists that were seminal figures for me. Mm-hmm. But all of them, I think, had something in common, was that they were not only practicing artists, but they also thought a lot about the antecedents of what we do, the reasons that we do what we do, mm-hmm. the role of art in society, the bigger things. I take this really seriously.
Yeah.
And I think anybody in any profession, a mechanic, you got to know every single nut and bolt in the car.
Yeah.
We also want to know the history of the automobile and the internal combustion engine and all that. So it's really just, I like homework.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was interesting. And in like one of your videos, you were talking about like I forget the artist's name, but it was like a very linear, very, very re representational and very very non-abstract, and just like how, and you were comparing it, and you were saying this has everything to do with my work,
Right.
and just kind of interested in how important you find like even differing kinds of art to you, to your practice.
Yes. And most of the two-dimensional painting, at least Western painting, that I admire and try to emulate and am inspired to study about is not necessarily what one would call abstraction. And that gets into an interesting territory where, what is abstraction? All art is abstract. All painting is abstract, because that just simply means you have to remove it or simplify it or distill it down in order to translate it from one experience, meaning the real world, into another experience, meaning the two-dimensional flat plane. So you have to, as Robert Rosenblum say, bend the laws of nature to fit the laws of art. So essentially, you're flattening the world as you see it into forms, lines, and colors. And to do that, you have to abstract. So once people get over that, the fear of that word, it just simply means to remove. Then you start to realize that, hey, wait a minute, I can look at the world and see just shapes and colors. And if you can see the world as shapes and colors, it's easier to paint shapes and colors.
For sure. For sure. I think that's amazing. It's amazing. So now you just turned 60.
Yeah.
So I wanted to kind of to, and you've been painting the whole time. So just kind of like just very interested in your whole career slash process. You said that you learned art from the library, or that's how you started I guess art. Talk some about that.
So I never decided to be an artist, and I never knew that one could do such a thing. I knew that I had a facility with drawing, with just simply rendering what was in front of me. And growing up in Rokeby, South Carolina, it was marsh scenes and the beach and sand dunes and really simple docks and all that kind of stuff. So
Beautiful things.
beautiful things and things that were right in front of me. And I also had a curiosity for materiality. And I would take scoopfuls of plough mud, splat them on the dock under the savage Carolina sun, and then I would arrange little bits of colored paper across that mud. And then I would take another fistful of mud on top of that. Then I'd look down and get an oyster shell, and then I would skim layers of that kind of translucent slime, reveal little bits of color of the paper showing through the slime, and it would be more intense or less intense depending on how hard or lightly I scraped with the shell. Then I would push it all off into the marsh with my hand, and I would do it again. And it didn't mean anything. It served no purpose whatsoever. It just felt good to make something from nothing that had no purpose to exist, only simply to be itself, and to make me feel to what I like to call the to restore my emotional and sensuous life. That to me is our job in the
Love that.
granular level. So again, back to being a kid, I was 10 years old. My mom would take me to the Chapin Memorial Public Library, whom I'm about to gift them a painting in honor of their role in my trajectory.
Cool.
And I would pore through the art history section one book at a time, and it was the 700s and the Dewey Decimal System. I wasn't necessarily looking for anything. I just knew that I was determined to increase my visual literacy. I liked looking at paintings, and I liked reading what I could or understand about painters, mostly European, mostly French Impressionists, because that's what they had.
So they have.
I didn't understand everything. I didn't have the bandwidth to do so at 10 years old. I just simply kept turning the pages just out of curiosity. And then mom would pick me up and we'd have a raspberry donut at Krispy Kreme. So it's just a sweet, literally a sweet memory. Goes back to the importance of scholarship and of the role of the library in all of what we do. And, the first artist I ever met in Myrtle Beach was me. I didn't know that anybody could do this.
Right.
My parents were very good in supporting my practice. My dad would ply me with colored pencils and watercolor. My mom also supportive, but in a little more practical way, kind of pushing me towards maybe radiology or architecture or things like that, which I understand. And I would just nod and then go back to my little watercolors. So it wasn't I wasn't a rebel. I was a good student, not a great student. I was terrible at sports, but I was friends with both the athletes and the nerds. I could talk about basketball and Star Trek in the same, in the same. Yeah. I played
That's
in bands and I had a good Myrtle Beach was a great place to grow up, I have to say, and I still say that. And I'd like to say that what the reason that I paint is because I observed as a kid a high-speed collision between two landscapes. One was artificial, neon light, arcades, amusement parks, and the other was natural, ancient rivers and Spanish moss and twisted oak trees. And if you smash those two environments up against one another over and over again, they start to create a third thing. And that thing is it's a pulsating energy, and it's kind of a visual propulsion that essentially is the subject matter of my work. So I've been painting for 50 years since I was 10, and I essentially do the same thing over and over and over again. The difference is that I've learned my materials more, so I can say it more concisely, more richly, and more directly without as much sort of external noise or influence or desire to be liked or disliked. I simply show up every day and I make stuff from nothing. My aim is not to be great, it's simply to be good. I'm a strong believer in that good enough is what to aim for, not greatness. So it takes a lot of pressure off.
I love that. And I think the way you described the lighting, the way your paintings were inspired, I think that explains it so well. That's like the perfect description of it.
No, thank you.
I think that's it. So I think I think you just so growing up in that environment, is that how you learned it, or just created it?
Yes, I'm a believer that art is not created, art is made. And the making of something involves the mastery of tools and techniques and materials. The great Charleston blacksmith, Philip Simmons, whom I met through William Halsey back in the early 80s when I just started College of Charleston, told me that, and he's famous for saying this, in order to make iron, you have to know how to keep a fire hot. And what I've learned from that brilliant statement is that work has to come before work. In other words, you have to know your materials and the limitations of the materials in order to speak, just like a poet has to have a broad vocabulary in order to plumb just the right word to bring the viewer into that experience. Or a NASCAR driver has to know exactly how an engine is put together so that when they put the pedal to the metal, they know what's going on. So one must know their materials, and that has been my continual discovery, hence the reason for showing up and working every day, not all day, but every single day with no expectations whatsoever. It was W.H. Auden said that art is small beer. And what I love about that is it takes a lot of pressure off that it doesn't have to be a game changer, every single painting. It doesn't have to solve problems and address huge issues and change the world, because a painting cannot change the world. A painting can simply change one person's world at a time by filling his or her remaining moments of life with supreme quality. And I think that's enough. And I think, again, to lift those, the trying to do too many things, I think weakens what painting does best, which, as I said before, is to renew our emotional and sensuous lives.
Love that. Oh, I love that. That is so great. So this exhibit at Gerald Milberg, The Wild South. that I love those paintings, love all of them. I love, yeah, I love your style. I love everything about it. Talk me through like how you, and I listened to something that said that it, I sort of understood you to say that you created paintings for specific exhibitions, like the colors. Did you create that this exhibition for Gerald Melberg, or are these like, do you do this for every exhibition?
Yes. So I do generally two solo exhibitions per year, which is a lot because each one is about 12 paintings of different sizes. And then I do a number of group shows and art fairs, and that sort of fills out my schedule. So I like to work in series, and I have a fairly big studio here. It's about, I don't know, 600 square feet. And I work all four walls at the same time. And the reason I do that is for practical reasons, because I paint quite thickly in oil, which takes a long time to dry. And also for thematic or consistency reasons, I want there to be both an intellectual and a physical or visual thread that connects all of the paintings. So at the end of 6 to 8 months, I will have one cohesive thought process and body of work that kind of looks like it belongs together. So the Gerald Show, which just opened in October and runs through January 3rd of 26, was sort of conceived, back in, well, I guess the early spring of this year. And again, the Wild South, all of my paintings, all of them refer to the landscape of the low country of South Carolina between Charleston and Myrtle Beach. That's as Pat Conroy said, where my soul grazes like a lamb on incoming tides. That's the thing I know the best. I am deeply rooted in the physicality and the light and the geography of a specific place. That's where I learned how to see, and that's the well to which I bring my bucket and dip over and over and over again. The Wild South is just sort of the culmination of the last, I don't know, probably 35 years of painting or 40 years since I've lived in New York, is an attempt to sort of retether myself to the things that made me a painter in the first place, which is humidity, wildness of heat. And I think that there are so many storytellers and musicians and artists that come from the Deep South, I think because it's so damn hot. And I think heat makes people crazy.
It's
And
just all right.
if you're an artist, and a lot of them don't like hearing this, you have to, in some way, be a little bit crazy. And I don't mean, knuckle dragging, nutso, but I mean, you have to be willing to commit yourself to something that has no purpose to exist whatsoever. We
You're
don't
right.
heat bombs, we don't purify water, we don't solve problems. We make things that have no purpose to exist other than to be themselves. So it's like a ship in a bottle. It doesn't do anything other than be a ship in a bottle. And there's something really beautiful about something that's created only to be itself. So that when you bring yourself to it and you graft your vitality and your thoughts onto this thing, that has no reason to be there other than to receive those thoughts and that vitality. I don't know, it creates, it bounces back to you in a way that I think is just so primal and so luminous, that that's why the arts are so very important, never more so than now. And it's important that each of us do what we can to advocate for the arts in all of its guises, and do things like what we're doing to just simply talk about it, to keep it alive. And I do everything I can through the videos and the books and the talks, and I try to do what I was taught.
Okay, well, I was taking notes when you were doing your speech at Gerald Melberg, and I wrote something down, and it didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me because I didn't I wrote James Brown, you realized you could make money creating something of no tangible use, and that's sort of like what you were saying. But could you elaborate on that? Because I don't think I captured that entire thought.
So yeah, I think that analogy or anecdote that I think I opened that talk with, was the first moment that I realized that people were on this earth whose sole job it was to make art, to create something from nothing that had no purpose whatsoever other than to renew our emotional and sensual lives. And for me, it was James Brown. And It was a sound check, and I think it was 19, it was when I was 10, so 75, something like that, in Myrtle Beach. And my parents knew the promoter, and we went to the auditorium, and the house lights were up, and people were milling around, and technicians. And my dad put me on one of the giant monitor speakers to the side of the stage, and I sat with my legs crossed facing the microphone, and out comes James Brown and the band, and they just kicked. And the vibration, the bass, Brooke, came up through my spine,
I'm
into
sure.
my brainstem, and out the top of my head.
Oh,
And
wow.
I had no time to react or to think about or to analyze. I could only feel. And it was miraculous. And then they stopped. They ended the song, and all the sound vibrated up into the rafters. And then he turned around and went off the stage. And I was like, oh my God, there are people whose job it is to make this. And you can make a living doing that. I didn't realize it. And I knew that's what I wanted to do, was to make stuff. And still to this day, it's when I look at a painting, or I hear a piece of music, or I read something, I feel it come up the back of my spine and into my skull. That's how I know it's hit me. It doesn't come through the intellectual analytical part first. You have to feel it in your bone marrow first, because
No, I get it.
thoughts always start with feelings. So it's important for an artist to let us feel something first, and then the intellectual part, which is important, can sort of let it wash over you, and then meaning is created in those ways. But every time I'm speaking to students or young artists or anyone really, I'll say the first question you should ask yourself when you step up to a work of art is not what does it mean, but simply what am I looking at? And look at the Marisol behind you. I first of all, I see the encasements. Then I see the heads and the idea of black and white on these beautiful colored guises, apparel. I'm looking at a thing that is vertical and is almost the same size as me. I've looked at those in galleries and museums. So what am I looking at first? What is the artist telling me by the way he or she has made this thing? That's the first key. They're telling you something by how it's made. That's why it's so important to know your materials and to make it to the best of your ability, because then you're transferring that energy to your viewer in the clearest possible way. That's how you get under their skin. That's how James Brown got into my spinal cord.
Love that. Love that. Oh, and side note, James Brown recorded Papa's Got a New Brand, a brand new bag in Charlotte, North Carolina. And
Is that right?
I pass by the studio like almost every day.
It's hallowed ground. He's a South
It
Carolina boy, so
is.
right.
Totally. So yeah, that's my dad's like bit of trivia to everyone that and so like I've grown up knowing that and just I think that's so cool.
I love that thought,
But I think it's so cool how you find inspiration from everything.
Right.
And just you can just philosophize about everything and just how do you think that's affected your work or how has that affected your process, I guess?
It has taught me that even to this day, I still don't think of myself as an artist. I think of myself as my tagline on social media is a failed magician who makes a living painting. So I'm a painter, but I don't I'm careful not to let that subsume my entire identity. I'm a husband and a dad, most importantly, and I come to my studio every day and I make these things. And I swear I could stop doing this tomorrow if it didn't bring me the contentment and purpose that I have enjoyed for the last 50 years. So it's not about the making of it, and it's not about market-driven forces and all that, although I do like making a living at this, and I work very hard to do that. And I have the best dealers in the business, Gerald and Mary Melberg being two of them in Charlotte. But it's not the reason I do this. Michael Tysack used to say, if you want to be an artist, you have to know everything. And we would giggle because, of course, one can't know everything. But it's not about trying to know everything. It's about trying to do something that is absolutely impossible. But somehow there's a little grain in your inside of you that wants to try to do the impossible. And that's, I think, where the crazy comes in. You know, we come to our studios and we confront this thing that's been around for, you know, 1,000 years. And it mystifies me. And the older I get, the more I realize that I know exactly what I'm doing. I know why I'm doing it, but I don't want to say mystical because that sounds a little bit too I don't know, too new agey. Like there's a reverie in it, an exaltation. To get to even more 19th century American romantic terms that just, I don't know, it just every single day I want to come here and I want to experience this and I want to be able to bring into it almost like a soup every possible thing that I see and respond to, hence your suggestion that that I'm inspired by everything. I think to not be, I think, is a betrayal of what we do. So one has to say yes to everything, essentially, is what I'm saying.
No, I love that. I absolutely love that. And I also, what you were talking about, that art needs to come through the bone marrow. That there's it's so funny because every time I see like art, I'm just kind of like a piece of art that I really like. It's just kind of like I don't have any words. I'm just kind of like, oh my gosh, this is so great. And
Right.
then that's like things like great and awesome are the only words I can think of because I'm just like, oh my gosh. And then like it's only like after I like sit like about a few minutes and like I can think of like proper words and things
Yeah.
sound at least somewhat educated or somewhat knowledgeable about art and just make some kind of sense out of it. But like the first it'll just hit me. I'll be like, oh my gosh, wow. And then I'm just like, and then it'll take me a while to get words.
And that's exactly the right sequence of events as well. It was Philip Guston would talk about the matter, meaning the material, the wood and the paint in the Marisol behind you. For me, thick oil paint. For a dancer, muscles. But there has to be some sort of barrier between the artist and the viewer through the matter, which is the stuff. If you can sort of put up a little bit of resistance to your viewer first, so that they have to deal with the material, then they don't go right through the idea so quickly. That there's a little bit of a stickiness or a attraction that one has to get. And that's, I think, what you said before, that any work of art, there has to be that moment of exaltation and of like this, it hits you like a Mack truck, either good or bad, but it hits you and you respond to it and you're like, you know, there's a commotion of the mind, which the author Richard Ford talks about. So there's some sort of internal commotion, and then that settles down. And then, of course, the intellectual part can come in, and then you can look at precedents and context and, you know, political content. All art is political, but
Right, absolutely.
you can look at all of those, the deeper meaning part of it as well. But if it doesn't hit you, you know, right between the eyes first, to me, it becomes a little bit dry and academic. I'd much rather have the heat first. You know, it's and that's what I love about the South. You know, it's humid, it's hot, it's there's mosquitoes, there's snakes, and there's fire ants, and all this stuff that's designed to resist. You know, and you got to get through it or deal with it, and you got to live in it and coexist with it. And it was a darn good teacher for me to do this.
Well, it sounds like it because I mean your art is just fabulous and you can definitely tell that it's something different about it. And I guess it might and it's probably a combination of a bunch of stuff, but the South is a big part of it.
Very much so. And I think, again, people, I think, try a little bit too hard. It's the simple things. And as I've gotten older, I've learned again to sort of just peel away the layers one at a time and get back to the things that made me a painter in the first place. And, you know, it again is, as I say, the only problem with art is mosquitoes. So in those
It's
one words, I've given you everything you need to know about my paintings.
Yeah.
There's humidity, there's time of day, there's season, there's place, there's texture, there's light, there's discomfort, there's a problem and maybe a solution. I've transmitted a location to you without describing anything.
Yeah,
You just
absolutely.
make it up in your mind. I've
Yeah.
given you all the tools to create your own place, and in a way had a moment of telepathy through the terms of the work. And if I can do that, it is the magic that I couldn't do as a an illusionist as a kid with a cape on and
You're doing your magic with your art. I think that's great.
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, how long is the Wild South going to go on at Gerald Melberg? How long will it be?
That'll be up till January 3rd.
Okay. Cool. So not too much longer, but still have some time.
Yeah, there's
Perfect.
a good bit longer. Yeah, in that, and then they'll have what works are left, available to see if people do want to see them
Okay.
after the run of the show. So.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Brian. This has been so great.
You're welcome. Yeah, it's good to talk to you again.
Good
And thanks for
talking to
coming to the
you.
show and the talk last month.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll have to do this again very soon.
Yep, I'm here. I'm every day.
Awesome. Very cool. Very cool. Love it. Love it. Oh, how can people get in touch with you?
They can reach me through my website, Brian at brianrutenbergart.com, or through Gerald Melberg Gallery, or Forum Gallery here in New York. Those are ways. And also social media. Instagram is at Brian Rutenberg, and my Facebook, I think, is Brian Rutenberg Painter. But you can find me all over the internet and YouTube as well in my
Cool.
video series, Studio Visits,
Love
of
those.
which there are 95. So,
Okay,
yeah, thank
cool. Yeah, love those. Awesome. Awesome. Well, you have a great day, and we will definitely do this again.
all right, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much to Brian Rutenberg for taking the time to chat with me on Almost Thanksgiving. If you want to see more of Brian's work, you can find him on social media, check out his studio visits on YouTube, or go to his website, brianrutenbergart.com. If you're in Charlotte, the Wild South is going on until January 3rd at the Gerald Melberg Gallery. If you're finding value in these episodes, please like, share, or consider sponsoring my Patreon. As always, thanks for listening. This is a Hotspur Media production, music by Rue Walker.